All right, Bankless Nation, welcome to another episode of State of the Nation. We've got a special guest here, Joe Lubin. Before we get to Joe, State of the Nations, what do we do during State of the Nations, David?
We talk about a headline article, a headline news piece, something that's going through the news cycle, which for this week, it was the CME futures launch. Something cool that happens every single week. We get a guest on to talk about what's going on in the news cycle. And of course, this week, it's Joseph Lubin, who has watched the growth of Ethereum since day one. And now that ETH futures are launched, we want to get Joe on to talk about really what does this mean for the story of Ether, the asset, and Ethereum, the economy.
It has been quite the journey. So getting Joe's thoughts here are going to be cool. State of the Nation comes out every Tuesday. We stream this live over YouTube. So catch it there. That's the best way to catch it. You can also get it directly into your ears via the podcast. So catch it that way too. We release the podcast episodes on Wednesday. David, before we get to CME futures, before we talk to Joe, a few things going on in the nation that we should talk about. We just had Vitalik on the podcast where we got his reflections on the year that was 2020. We talked about rollups. We also talked about smart contract wallets, in particular the UX around social recovery. That was an awesome episode. What were your takeaways there?
Yeah, I often say that the crypto industry has one of the best vantage points to see the rest of the world because there's so many different things that happen that are happening in the world that are very new in 2020 and now 2021. Money printer go burr, the president getting deplatformed, social unrest. And crypto offers like a lens to see all of it. And that's kind of what Vitalik put into his 2020 Reflections blog post, which I found absolutely fascinating. Vitalik does a good job kind of putting into perspective how he sees the world and how crypto is going to impact the world when collision course of crypto impacts the rest of the world, which we all think is coming, especially this year. And so that was a pretty interesting piece. And then, of course, we get into more Ethereum-centric conversations such as rollups and how rollups work and why rollups are so cool, and also the intersection of social recovery and smart contract wallets specifically on L2s like rollups. Vitalik is long-term bullish on smart contract wallets on L2 platforms. And so that was just a fantastic pieces of blog post, Vitalik's blog post that we went through. So really informative episode.
Absolutely. Anytime Vitalik is on a podcast, I make a point to listen because there's always something insightful there. So do that. That came out on Monday. We also have Brett Johnson, who is coming out next week, our podcast recording with him. This is the guy behind the dollar milkshake theory. And we asked Brett about the crypto milkshake theory, but we also talk about the dollar's reserve currency status. So if you are tracking this from a monetary theory perspective, make sure you tune into that episode coming next Monday. And then David, this Thursday, we have a live AMA with Tasha from the Alpha Finance Protocol. This protocol has been like exploding in growth, just a massive amount of ETH locked. Last time I looked, it was like 3.5%. It was 0.5% of ETH locked, 350 million or something ETH locked inside of the Alpha Finance Protocol. So this is going to be a community AMA with Tasha, where we figure out where they're going next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the AMAs are fantastic for me personally, because I ask my own questions that I'm interested in. I get a ton of learning done during these things. And then, of course, we always turn to the YouTube chat box to get listener questions as well. The last AMA we did, the chat box was a pretty fun place to be. And so if you have questions about what Alpha is, how it works, or what's going on with Alpha in the future, definitely tune into that AMA coming this Thursday.
Guys, this is the secret. David and I do this Bankless thing for ourselves so that we can level up and so that we can learn, and we're just open sourcing it. That's actually the entire platform.
Open source learning.
Yeah. All right, David, before we get to Joe, I'm going to ask you the question I always ask you at the beginning of State of the Nations. What is the state of the nation this week, my friend?
The state of the nation is astounded. We are astounded. Elon Musk, the world's richest man, the CEO of like the most beloved company, at least from a younger person's perspective, just bought $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin. Like, we've never seen that large of a single purchase of Bitcoin ever. And it's been done by like Elon Musk, who has a massive platform and a massive following on Twitter. So like, just adding a core fundamental character right into the heart of like the Bitcoin world. And like Bitcoin paints its largest candle ever, a one-day candle, $8,000 in a single day. Absolutely insane. I'm astounded. I'm pretty sure the rest of the Bankless Nation is astounded as well.
Yeah, it's a pretty big week. And I kind of woke up to the fact that, crypto's mainstream now. Like, that's what's happening. You're still maybe early on ETH. You're still maybe early on DeFi. You are no longer early on Bitcoin, right? Like, yeah. Elon Musk is buying it, yeah. And it's going mainstream. This is also going to get some of the, I think, the Wall Street Bets crowd involved. Of course, Tesla is one of their beloved stocks. And I think given the events of GameStop, we've talked about that a lot here, this is going to draw some of their attention too. So dude, overall bullish, it's astounding. Good word choice, my friend. I'm wondering when you're going to run out of adjectives though, for these State of the Nation.
We're going through them quick.
That's awesome, especially the bullish ones. All right, guys, last thing. Consensus the conference is coming up. This is a really exciting conference to attend, especially in a crypto bull market. I remember my first bull market consensus conference. It was absolutely off the wall, insane. They're doing it virtual this year. It's happening May 24th. Ray Dalio is coming. Ooh. Like, we couldn't get Ray Dalio, 5 years ago. So this is Consensus the Conference, of course. You can reserve your place now. You could save $20 with Bankless. We've got a link in the show notes for you. So do that. In just a moment, we will be back to talk to Joe Lubin, co-founder of Ethereum, about ETH futures. But before we do, we want to tell you about our fantastic sponsors who made this episode possible.
Aave is a borrowing and lending protocol on Ethereum, and just recently released Aave version 2, which has a ton of cool new features that makes using Aave even more powerful. With Aave, you can leverage the full power of DeFi, Money Legos, Yield, and composability all in one application. On Aave, there are a ton of assets that you can deposit in order to gain yield, and all of those same assets can also be borrowed from the protocol if you have deposited collateral. Here you can see me getting a 200 USDC loan against my portfolio of a number of different DeFi tokens and ETH. I'll choose a variable interest rate because it's a lower rate than the stable interest rate option, but I could choose the stable interest rate option if I wanted to lock that interest rate in permanently. One of Aave's V2 features is the ability to swap collateral without having to withdraw your assets, trade them on Uniswap, and then deposit them back into Aave. Aave does all of this for you, all in one seamless transaction, so you don't have to repay loans in order to change the collateral you have backing them. Check out the power of Aave at aave.com. That's Aave.com. Gemini is the world's most trusted cryptocurrency exchange. I've been a customer of Gemini since I first got back into crypto back in 2017, and it has been my main exchange of choice to make my crypto buys and sells. Gemini is available in all 50 states and over 50 countries worldwide. And on Gemini, there are markets for over 30 various crypto assets, including many of the hot DeFi tokens like YFI, Aave, Uni, and also they are one of the few exchanges that has liquid DAI markets. Having both the option of logging into the Gemini.com website or instead opening the Gemini mobile app has allowed me to be able to access any and all exchange and on or off ramp services that I've needed to on a moment's notice. With instant deposits and fast withdrawals, I'm able to make my money do the things I want it to when I want it to. You can buy crypto safely and securely on Gemini with the peace of mind of knowing that your investments are insured and protected with industry-leading cybersecurity. You can open up a free account in under 3 minutes at gemini.com/gobankless. And if you trade more than $100 within the first 30 days after sign up, you'll be gifted a free $15 bonus. Check them out, gemini.com/gobankless.
Guys, we are back with State of the Nation. We've got Joe Lubin here, who is the co-founder of Ethereum. He needs no introduction to the Ethereum community. He's also the founder of Consensus, which has built some of the most important pieces of Ethereum infrastructure over the years, including MetaMask, which if you're going bankless, you probably use just about every day. Also Gitcoin, Infura, Truffle, many other pieces of infrastructure. Joe, how are you doing today, sir? Welcome to Bankless.
Great, thank you. I've been sitting back here in the weight room. I've got an appointment scheduled with my Bankless managers. I've got treasury management for people who like Ether.
You know, there's a live shot of David somewhere on Twitter, and he was caught inside of Wells Fargo today. I'm not sure how that happened, David, but like, you're supposed to be bankless, man. You're inside of Wells Fargo. What's going on?
Yeah, somebody caught me making a deposit.
Well, very good. Well, Joe, this is a really exciting week, I think, for all of crypto. David just talked about Elon Musk and his purchase of Bitcoin earlier, but also the launch of Ether futures on the CME. Maybe we could kind of rewind the clock a little bit and talk about, because you've seen this project through from inception, basically. When I Ethereum...
actually 2 weeks ago.
Okay, well, tell... 2 weeks. Weeks, not months, right? So, but Joe, you when you were starting the project early on with the other kind of co-founders, how did you think about ETH the asset? Did you ever think that there would be a day where it would be traded on the Chicago CME?
So I locked in pretty early on this stuff. I thought that when I read the Bitcoin white paper, I thought it would be massively transformational. I thought it would take quite a long time. I have been called an optimist or a true believer. And so I did think that there would be profound transformation accelerated by Vitalik's vision over how fast it would have happened if we were sort of moving bits around with a scanning tunneling microscope and trying to build software that way on the Bitcoin protocol. And I've spoken over the years about the fact that we were building infrastructure and that infrastructure was sort of commodity-like or would take on similar architectures as that of grains and precious metals and other kinds of commodities, and so would need financial instruments and deep financial infrastructure to get more efficient. We started out with super inefficient mining and wallets that would just set prices for you, and nobody would even know what they were or adjust them ever. And recently, our Infura team is launching something really, really cool called the Infura Transactions Manager. And they've demonstrated that people are overpaying pretty massively just because there's so much fear about getting your transaction handled that we can actually, using various techniques and intelligence, we can actually just assure people that the pitfalls that are inherent in sometimes in trying to get transactions processed are managed by a service that can save you money guarantee nearly that what you want to happen does happen. So I would say that I did and several people did anticipate that things would go mainstream. It is astonishing to see how fast it's happened. And I kind of want to call out my friends at ErisX. So we've been involved as investors and really actively with that project early on, ErisX. So the CME news is incredible. Super excited about it. It is much more institutional focused. Retail trader would have to jump through some hoops to take advantage of that. ErisX actually paved the way for the CME futures. So they launched May of last year, I think. So they've got Bitcoin futures, Ether futures, and spot, and they're certainly more friendly to retail. And they have a physically delivered product, which I think is important. It's something that I've been talking about for a long time. If you're a speculator or need to hedge in other ways, making sure difference from basis is not, because these are really two different markets, two different liquidity pools, and they can get skewed pretty badly. And so making sure they're locking in at delivery
Yeah. You know, physical delivery is key. I'm wondering your thoughts on this. Is this the kind of the CME, the listing on the CME and ErisX, as you were mentioning earlier, kind of paved the way for this? But is this basically U.S. regulators signaling that, yes, we agree ETH is a commodity asset, ETH is a commodity money?
Yes, absolutely. So Heath Tarbert made that statement explicitly. The SEC's basically said that. We said that in the first few months of the Ethereum project, that we saw it as a fuel, as one of the first crypto commodities. There are others and will be other crypto commodities. And you said money in there. I don't know if you think about whether ETH is money or not, but
I've thought about that. David and I have given that some thought, and we've come to the conclusion that indeed it is money. ETH indeed is money. Do you concur, David?
It is known.
So the question is, what is money, or what is money going forward? We know the three definitions of money. So numeraire, means of exchange, store of value. And we've positioned Ether as a crypto fuel. We also positioned it as a better money than money, and a better money than Bitcoin, even, because it's programmable and cheaper to fire around sometimes, usually. Well, we'll see that will change in both directions over time. And money is kind of contextual and social and symbolic. So cigarettes are money in some cases. Notches on sticks are money in some cases. I would argue in the future that we're not going to need abstract money so much, except as a numeraire. I would argue that maybe that gets taken care of by evolving baskets of tokens. But money is really a convenience right now. And in a world in which we're tokenizing everything, and in which we have intelligent agents determining which tokens you want to get rid of when you're paying for something first, and which tokens you want to receive when you're receiving in a certain order, and exchange services that can help you make that trade if you're not able to accomplish that directly, and just listings of tokens where you've got these open markets that are valuing the tokens, whether they're automated market makers or order books inside of the spread of automated market makers. I would argue that the role of money, the abstract role of money, is going to go away, and everything's going to be money.
Joe, I want to get your perspective on how this story of ETH has evolved so far, because, you know, we talk about ETH as money. We talk about like ETH as like a triple point asset, as gas, or, you know, store of value for DeFi. But I want to get your opinion as to what was the consensus around Ether, the asset, back in 2015, and how, knowing what we know now, the 6-year-old history of Ether and Ethereum, how has the path followed suit or not followed suit from the mental models that you had back in the early days of Ethereum? Like, what is surprising to you, and what is something that you just expected?
So there were things that we were thinking that we weren't saying. And we were initially not very disciplined in the first 2 or 3 months. And then we got very disciplined about what we would say publicly after discussions with lawyers. And so we crafted legal arguments to the effect that we would be selling a token that would not be considered by the SEC a sale of an unregistered security to any Americans. The characterization of Ether as a crypto fuel was genuine, is still genuine. It pays for storage and execution of computational steps on Ethereum. And we also really wanted to focus on the developer ethos, where it was all about building and then biddling, and not so much about early speculation. So the speculation came in a few years later, mostly in 2017. And that's great. I mean, we need speculators in our ecosystem. We need people, actors with all sorts of interests in our ecosystem. But the fact that we established the developer ethos early was really important. And as I said earlier, we did anticipate many of the things that were happening. We anticipated sharding in the first 3 days. I remember having a discussion about that. We had a burn model that we were working on with respect to Ether very early, which presages 1559. So it, you know, the execution has been remarkable, and it's incredibly difficult to stand up a technology top down. It has evolved beautifully by the agency of so many different actors with different expertise. Seems to be going pretty well. We've got a long way to go.
So Joe, for those not familiar with, you know, what futures listing, regulator approved futures listing means in the US, we have a lot of retail listeners out there, and they're probably not as familiar with kind of the traditional financial banking landscape. But what does this mean for the financialization of Ether as an asset, or even the institutions and their outlook on Ether as an asset?
Yeah, so there has been astonishing movement in the Bitcoin ecosystem, driven early on by people like my friend Mike Novogratz, more recently by Paul Tudor Jones, Stanley Druckenmiller, and a handful of others who've jumped in. And recently, Michael Saylor, who I think wins MVP already for 21, maybe for 20 as well, late 20. So MicroStrategy has taken a very structured, organized approach to pivoting almost their business model to turn their balance sheet into a Bitcoin museum where they're trading assets for Bitcoin and borrowing money and buying Bitcoin. And so far, I think that's gone very well for them. Bitcoin's a volatile asset, so and I know they're very smart, so that I expect they won't get into trouble. But they're packaging up the tremendous diligence that they did and the structured strategic steps that they've followed. And I think they mentioned it, maybe 1,000 or 1,400 CEOs and CFOs were on their live stream. And I'm sure many more will be watching the recorded versions. And so Novogratz has been saying the herd is coming. For several years. And by that, he meant that the Ethereum and Bitcoin phenomenon was largely retail driven. And by the herd, he meant that institutionals were getting more and more interested. The herd is now taking university economics courses delivered by Michael Saylor and crew in how to exist and thrive in the early days of the decentralized protocol system and in the early days of DeFi. With respect to futures options, regulators in the United States, these organizations need to be prudent as they divest themselves of certain assets and invest in certain assets. There is likely a transformation going on, an evolution going on between legacy or state issued assets and newer decentralized protocol assets in different forms. They need the, as you said, financial infrastructure. They need instruments so that they can respond in real time if they want to put on a hedge, or if they want to take advantage of an opportunity, or, you know, if they want to wire up a lending-driven financial flow in real time in DeFi on Ethereum. So that's coming real soon. Real organizations are getting serious about that. And bottom line, they're not ready to hedge in DeFi on Ethereum, but absolutely, they already have the accounts open. They have for years or decades, and this moves cryptocurrencies into their wheelhouse, and They know that the world is evolving much more rapidly than we all expected it to, for certain reasons. The smart ones, the aware ones, are going to survive and thrive. And if your head is buried and you, for whatever reason, aren't paying attention to or refusing to understand and acknowledge what's going on in our ecosystem, then you're going to have a wicked game of catch up or find another job or career or something like that.
Speaking of a wicked game of catch up, one thing that really interests me about this ETH futures release is that it took Ether only 5 years to get futures, yet it took Bitcoin 9. And like naturally, Bitcoin came first. It has a harder fight to fight. But Ether got futures faster than Bitcoin did. What is your takeaway from that?
So I would say thank you to Bitcoin for being there first and paving the way significantly.
Big brother Bitcoin.
And so, the CME, SIBO, others, ErisX especially, have done a tremendous amount of work to try to get the regulators comfortable with this. It was weeks away, a few years away. and regulators have put up hurdles or just slowed processes. So built on the shoulders of giants and giants in our ecosystem. And I think what you're saying has merit that I forget the exact wording of Mr. Tarbert, but he just said something like Ethereum is awesome, period, stop, something like that. That's just a reflection of the understanding of people, financial professionals, who, when they take the time to understand the technology, are just astonished at all the problems that it will solve and all the opportunities that it will create and the frictions that it will eradicate and the financial flows that will get immediate and the agency that small organizations and individuals will have over their economic freedom, their economic activity, and their political activity.
You know, Joe, on Bankless, we've called Bitcoin kind of the gateway drug to crypto, the gateway drug to DeFi. And I wonder if you sort of see that playing out. So you captured this moment in time where you've got Michael Saylor putting Bitcoin on the MicroStrategy balance sheet. We've just come off news this week where it turns out Tesla stacked $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin in January. And I was kind of struck by their SEC filings where it sort of disclosed that information, that they said they would pursue a strategy to continue acquiring digital assets. They didn't just say Bitcoin, they said digital assets. So I'm curious, do you think that Ether is just going to follow in that same path now that we've got regulator approvals, CME futures? Is Ether going to be the next thing that a publicly traded company like a MicroStrategy buys? Maybe they start staking it. Maybe a Tesla buys Ether as part of its digital strategy portfolio. What's your take here?
Yeah, so I was a Bitcoiner. Then I encountered Ethereum and was blown away by how much more expressive and capable it would be. And we realized a lot of that vision. I like to think of both the Bitcoin token and the Ethereum token as high-powered money. You may have called it permissionless bandwidth. Those tokens are beautiful as they are. Ethereum adds onto both of those high-powered money foundations an astonishing layered complexity, we will build an astonishing layered complexity out of magic internet money protocol Legos. That's where the excitement lies. So in staking, in massively decentralizing these networks, I expect that we will see many organizations contract to with a cloud or run their own infrastructure. Consensus offers mining infrastructure, or sorry, we do a little bit of mining, but staking infrastructure, which is, I think, what you're interested in discussing. And these foundational protocols, or at least Ethereum, serve as platform for other kinds of platforms. And these other kinds of platforms are what I've sometimes called collaboration networks. And so we as individuals and organizations will be participating in a wide variety of collaboration networks that are built on platforms like Ethereum. And they will involve investing, they will involve holding tokens, they will involve voting the governance rights on your tokens. They will involve active treasury management. They will involve setting goals for your collaboration network and raising money for your collaboration network and executing the work. So all of those different functions that essentially sit in different companies right now are getting much more tightly integrated. I'm not sure how that's going to play out other than by having much more granular groups of people responsible for that and the boundaries between what we call companies sort of dissolving, where I and you two will be part of lots of these collaboration networks for work or leisure or research. And so I fully expect that any organization that wants to operate optimally and protect its interests will need to pay attention to many aspects of the emerging decentralized tokenized economy. And so, treasury management doesn't necessarily mean just financial aspects anymore, or it won't soon.
There's something interesting about Ether CME futures that is uniquely different than Bitcoin futures, because Ether, the asset, and Ethereum, the platform, have a roadmap, right? There are obstacles and objectives that we are going to get over as a community. Like we mentioned EIP-1559, that has become a core component of Ether, the asset, yet it is not yet included. And then we also have just the further democratization of staking and then ETH staking derivative tokens. So there's plenty of upgrades to put into Ether the asset. Ether the asset is set to have software updates. But that's weird, because the Chicago Mercantile Exchange is a place to trade commodities. And nowhere has there ever been a commodity on the CME that has gotten a software update, right? Wheat doesn't get a software update. Bitcoin does not get software updates. So how do you think about this comparison, where like the CME is trading this asset that has like this roadmap? And how do you see the Ether roadmap, specifically perhaps with EIP-1559 and then Ether staking derivatives, how do you see that impacting the long-term just institutional models of understanding Ether, the asset?
So the first easy out answer to your question is that yes, Ether is the token and the commodity, and just like the grain industry or the oil industry or the metals industry, there are lots of companies that organize their own strategies and roadmaps around sourcing, refining, packaging, and delivering and utilizing those commodities. So I can easily map our ecosystem onto those ecosystems. But the more profound, perhaps, answer to your question is that things are shifting. I mean, the old world has certain models, and as I discussed before, where these tokens aren't just money, they represent a lot of different things. It's certainly a new kind of commodity. It is unprecedented, and we're coming up. So it's a paradigm shift. It's stated more intensely, it's a clash of civilizations, and hopefully it'll be a gentle evolutionary clash. But it's going to involve us bringing forth great, exciting technology and showing the benefits of that technology by demonstration, as Uber has done and Airbnb has done. And then it's going to involve a discussion in various jurisdictions around the world about how they would like this technology to fit in and serve their particular civilization, their particular society, economy, ethos. It will serve Sweden differently from how it will serve mainland China, probably. And it's a powerful technology, so I think it's going to transform everything over time. It's, you know, even regulation in the United States, it's going to involve a lot of learning from regulators, and some of them have done a great job already. And it's going to involve a change in some of the rules, just because, you know, lots of rules around financial regulation and compliance were designed to protect consumers from custodians. So if consumers are only using self-custodied wallets and systems, then that some of that shouldn't apply, or some of that should fall away potentially.
Joe, when we come back, I want to talk to you more about this idea of the clashing of civilizations. But before we do, we want to tell you a bit about the sponsors that made this episode possible.
Synthetics is Ethereum's decentralized derivatives liquidity protocol. What does that mean? Synthetics is a platform for creating and trading synthetic assets, which are assets that are priced via an oracle rather than bids or asks. Traders can use the Quenta exchange, which hosts and trades all of the synthetic assets created by Synthetics. Traders on Quenta can trade synthetic tokens like SBTC, SOIL, or SDeFi. Because Quenta is powered by Synthetics, traders experience zero slippage on their trades. No, I didn't mean low slippage, I meant no slippage, because that is the power of the Synthetics platform. No slippage on your trades. You can also easily short assets with iSynths, which are synthetic assets that move inversely to their target asset. Synthetics isn't just for traders. Developers can build on Synthetics to access the infinite liquidity offered by synthetic assets, or investors can stake collateral to the protocol and earn fees that the protocol collects. If you're a trader and you're looking for a trading platform not found in the legacy world, check out Quenta.io. If you're a developer or you just want to earn yield on your collateral, go to www.synthetics.io, where you can stake your SNX or ETH and earn fees from Synthetics. If you want to live a bankless life, you need to get a Monolith DeFi Visa card. Monolith is both a 1-2 punch of an Ethereum smart contract wallet, as well as an accompanying Visa card that lets you spend the money that you have in your Ethereum wallet wherever Visa is accepted. It's really a fantastic tool that lets you use Ethereum for what it does best, which is holding and managing your financial assets, but also keeps you connected to the rest of the world's payment rails. Monolith also offers on-ramp services for getting your fiat money into the world of DeFi. So it's trivial to top up your Monolith card if ever you need to, and your deposited money goes straight into your non-custodial wallet. So your money is never held by a centralized intermediary because your Monolith wallet is native to Ethereum. Monolith helps you transcend both the legacy and the crypto worlds because the money that you hold in your Monolith wallet has the power of DeFi behind it. Swapping assets on Uniswap or earning yield in DeFi is at your fingertips. But with Monolith, so are the groceries at your grocery store or the coffee at your coffee shop. Go to monolith.xyz to sign up and get your Monolith Visa card today.
All right, guys, we are back with Joe Lubin. Joe, I want to talk about this comment that you made just prior to our break, where you talked about this clash of civilizations, right? And I want to unpack kind of what you mean there, right? Because there are maybe many elements of these civilizations that are clashing. So the bankless dichotomy would be there's a bit of traditional finance versus this new decentralized finance. We've also talked about kind of the nation state way of organizing things versus the protocol network state way of organizing things. But what do you think about when you talk about this clash of civilization? What are the civilizations that are clashing here?
So what I was thinking about was something that is an older notion, and it's still relevant. But early on, several years ago, before the project or in the early days of the project, it was at least clear to us that We would need to be careful how we organized, how we launched, how we publicized, how we executed the project. There was a concerted effort to avoid the United States of America. I sort of jumped back pretty quickly because I did want to operate there. But there was a history of the United States of America not liking projects that created their own money. And so we thought it might be a bad idea to piss the United States off early on. We'd land at JFK and get tackled to the tarmac by the FBI and made an example of. And so we did consciously avoid that for the first year while still engaging with American lawyers. And we set up in Switzerland because they cherish freedom and decentralization. And they think of government as a service pretty much rather than a right, and they negotiate with you. So I had a great experience there. And things went remarkably well, remarkably quickly. We haven't made any horrible mistakes, but we were aware that well-resourced vested interests would take notice of us at some point. We've been delighted at how many people in government and industries really embrace these ideas and think they're valuable and are adopting them and supporting them. But still, we have been thinking that at some point we might run up against organizations that have vested interests that don't want to play, that don't appreciate our existence and the transformation that we might represent. And so we'll see that, I think, although this change wave is awfully powerful. I believe that Ethereum as a technology, because it's so much more expressive, has staying power. I didn't feel that Bitcoin had the same staying power just because you don't really build much on it. It's just, everything's a belief system, and Bitcoin is much more of a belief system than Ethereum is, because you can just build a lot of functionality on Ethereum. Until the recent activities where this belief system is being really strongly religiously adopted by major corporations in the United States, I wasn't certain about Bitcoin. I'm pretty certain now. And we just need a lot of that so that Bitcoin, Ether, and other tokens, other protocols are so embedded in the more fast-moving organizations like companies, you know, similar to how Uber and Airbnb established themselves and succeeded and then dealt with the regulators after. I think we're on a good trajectory. And so hopefully the clash of civilizations will be as gentle as it has been for Uber and Airbnb.
Yeah, absolutely. So this kind of leads into a little bit of you know, what you're doing with consensus, which I think is fascinating and fits into this, right? So it may be that, as we call kind of governments the final boss, the U.S. government has not raised its head on Ethereum because there are so many potential wins.
Sure they have.
Well, they have in some ways, but there are also like lots of wins.
They've been pretty positive, yeah.
Yeah, and exactly. So like, when the U.S. sees maybe its geopolitical adversary like China create its own closed private blockchain type solution, well, it is adversarially beneficial for the world to have a more open, transparent Linux type, Ethereum type open ledger. So can you talk about what consensus is doing maybe with respect to stablecoins and how governments around the world, particularly like free, open, democratic governments, think about Ethereum and the wins that they can get from an open ledger like Ethereum?
Yeah, so we've done a fair amount of work to bring the Ethereum technology into the central bank digital currency context. We work with two central banks over time in the past, and we're working with four currently, and I think we're about to add three more. And There are different use cases that we're exploring, and it's early days for most of them. Certainly China and a couple other nations are earliest in rolling out pilot systems. Others are really quite in the early stages. So the use cases are things like cross-border payments or retail payments, so just payments by consumers. And the Ethereum technology is getting real interest, which is exciting. One argument that we've been trying to make in certain contexts, and we made it in the context of the United States, is that, it's nice to roll out your central bank digital currency on the next generation of technology. That just makes sense. But if you really think about it, this is likely or can be the foundation of your economy. And we're in a moment where we're transitioning everything we do from analog and frictional forms to natively digital frictionless forms, whether it's identity or reputation or money or other kinds of digital assets. And when you do that, clearing and settlement happens in the instant of the transaction. You squeeze all the delays out of your system. And if you're squeezing all the delays out of these different financial transactions, you're essentially compounding the creation of value much more closely over time. And so you're likely to grow value in your ecosystem much faster. So why would you want to build a money-only blockchain platform or near blockchain platform for your CBDC, central bank digital currency, when you can build something with smart contracts and it can serve as your nation state blockchain, which interoperates with public mainnet blockchains? We do need public mainnet blockchains. I think nation states can and will and should have their own nation state infrastructure. So think of it as a subnet, and different regions within the nation state can and probably should do that sort of thing. But we're gonna need a global settlement layer for digital assets that that everybody can trust, especially as nation states have issues with one another, as I think we're gonna increasingly see over the next decade or so. So even if these nation states do have issues, they should be able to enter into agreements. They should be able to stake value in these agreements, and there should be impartial judges that can potentially judge when something bad happens and slash stakes. So there should be, treaties can be executed on blockchains. And most of the time when these nation states make agreements with one another, there isn't much enforcement power unless you decide to do something really destructive.
Could not agree more with that. Like, so Dave and I have talked about so much in Bankless how Ethereum kind of provides this credibly neutral substrate for the world. And it can solve human, global, international coordination problems that we couldn't previously solve. Joe, I feel like we could get you on an entire episode to talk about all of the other things that consensus is doing. Because there's so much from MetaMask to Infura to all of these other things. But if you could just
see you next week.
Yeah. And that should be like a 3-hour long episode. But if you could just pick one thing right now, just one maybe project, something interesting that is brewing at consensus that Bankless listeners would be interested in, what would you talk about today?
It's a hard one. Let me just go with our approach. So we've built a blockchain stack, the most dominant or utilized blockchain stack in the Ethereum ecosystem and the blockchain ecosystem, that consists of Quorum for enterprise with built essentially on two different Ethereum clients, Geth and Hyperledger Vesu. Above that, we have Infura and Truffle and Diligence, which is our security audit group that also produces software. So that's an infrastructure layer that services developers, and MetaMask sits on top of that with the, I think we're at 1.8 million monthly active users now in MetaMask. So that's consumer facing, and it's also B2B2C as we launch the Snaps plugin architecture. We have a group that is building applications. We call that group Commerce and Decentralized Finance Group. And they are able to launch applications for consumers and make them available, make the APIs available to developers through Infura and Truffle. And also for some of them, make those financial instruments or financial flows or other services available to enterprise as enterprise gets more and more excited about lining their treasuries with Ether. And so the first really exciting application of all of that is launching something called Metaswaps. And so we will be, Metaswaps is off the charts in terms of its success in bringing uniform interface to swapping tokens and great pricing. So you're getting everything that you need in MetaMask rather than going to different aggregators or DEXs. We also have private market makers involved. And we're gonna be doing that for a whole bunch of products and services for those three cohorts, consumers, developers, and enterprise. So long-winded, but Metaswaps is exciting and much more to come.
Joe, I think everyone in the Bankless Nation and the broader Ethereum community at large has to thank you for everything you've done at Consensus, building out what makes the Bankless Nation tick. Like, some of this infrastructure, we wouldn't be able to have this podcast without some of the infrastructure that came out of Consensus. As a longstanding veteran of this crypto industry and have seen many, many bull markets, I want to ask this final question before we sign off here. What I'm trying to get my head around is like how big this bull market's about to be, right? And like I'm trying to like keep myself calm and like not get out over my skis and not just like get too bullish just because other people are getting bullish. But the world's richest man just bought $1.5 billion worth of Bitcoin. So like on the Richter scale of bull markets, like can you like, what are you feeling? Like how are you measuring this thing?
Yeah, so one should always be careful, and markets have a characteristic ebb and flow normally. I don't think of this as a bull market. I think of it as a global paradigm shift. And it's gonna be a new way of organizing all of the systems on the planet on new sounder trust foundations. And we're building financial infrastructure on that new sound trust foundation. Everything else can be re-architected much better on top of that. You don't see assets power in such straight lines for quite long times unless something is going on. So I think we were already in the middle of a paradigm shift, and that paradigm shift is now surfing the perfect wave, which is... caused by the perfect storm of COVID and financial bubbles of all kinds. I mean, we're at the end of a 70 plus year debt super cycle. That's how the system was organized. And people have recognized that and are fed up about that. And it's broken, so broken anyway, that a new paradigm has to occur. So, I won't say that I'm bullish, but something's going on.
No, I think that smile says everything we need. And it has been fantastic having you on the Bankless podcast. We really appreciate it, all the work that you've done in this space. And you've definitely foreseen many of these things before they happened. Congratulations to everyone in the Ethereum community on CME ETH Futures. This is a massive milestone. And Joe, thanks for coming on and sharing it with us.
Yeah, so thanks to you guys too. You guys are such a smart, entertaining breath of fresh air and such wonderful energy. I'm very grateful for the work that you guys do. And I know that the ecosystem loves you.
Well, we appreciate it, Joe. We got to get
you
in a bank.
It's also a ton of
fun. Yeah, it is fun. We just do this to learn. Yeah. And there's no place I would rather be. And I think David feels the same. We both feel like we work for the community, for the protocol, as I know you do. Well, fantastic, guys. Thanks, Joe, once again. Risks and disclaimers, of course. We talked a little bit about the bull market there, but you have to keep in mind, ETH is risky.
None of that was financial advice.
None of this is financial advice, as always. Never ever, right, David? Crypto is risky, so is DeFi. You could lose what you put in, but we are head west. This is absolutely the frontier, and we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.